digging into family history, the surge of interest in genealogy. The ability to trace your family roots through DNA testing has led to a newfound interest in genealogy, also known as recreational genomics. I'm Keith Shortall. Millions of Americans are purchasing DNA test kits to help them discover where they come from and who they are or are not related to. Some have found surprising information about long-lost cousins or origins in far-flung continents through these methods. But DNA testing isn't the only means by which you can find out about your past. There are lots of paper trails that, when combined with a little sleuthing, can help chart one's family tree. Today, we'll learn more about both approaches to genealogy and what you should be aware of when trying to discover where you came from. Maine Calling is next. First, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Keith Shortall, and this is Maine Calling. It's a basic human impulse, the desire to know where you come from. It's no wonder, then, that new techniques and DNA testing are fueling a surge of interest in finding one's ancestors. Today, we'll hear from experts on how genealogy works, whether you go the DNA route or choose to follow a paper trail. Joining me in our studio, Carol Prescott McCoy. She's an educator and family historian and president of the Maine Genealogical Society. Her company, findyourroots.com, conducts research and provides education on genealogy. Nancy Mason is the administrator of the Maine Genealogical Project on Family Tree DNA. She started the Maine Genealogical Dig to help people with DNA testing. As always, we want to hear from you. Have you tried searching your family history? Did you make any interesting discoveries? Our phone number is 1-800-399-3566, and you can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Carol, we'll start with you. If the premise of this show is true, that interest in where we come from and sleuthing that out is on the rise, what's fueling that? Why is that?
Well, that's a really interesting question. I think that certainly some of it is coming from DNA, but also the shows that have been on genealogy, whether it's Finding Your Roots or the Genealogy Roadshow or what Henry Louis Gates Jr. has done, makes it look so exciting. And one of the dangers, though, is makes it look really easy, as if you can just go to all these places and this stuff magically appears. It's a lot more challenging and fun than that. I think in general, it's something that is a really, as you said, is a really basic instinct. For me, I got excited about it because my grandparents were wonderful storytellers, and they also had a lot of old photographs. And I just became really curious about doing it. I'm not sure if as we get older, some of it isn't wondering who we're going to meet on the other side, you know. So I think it's just very thrilling to find out who you are. I'm going to go to Northern Ireland this summer to go to where the McCoys were from in Northern Ireland. And it'll just be so much fun to even stand on the soil.
So how do you help people do the same thing? How do you help them find their roots?
Well, the first thing I encourage people to do is to talk to the people who are alive right now. And I think that's a reason to really get going on it, because if you wait till your grandparents or your parents or your cousins have passed away, you're stuck with interpreting these little scraps of paper and rumors. So I guess the first thing is talk to everybody who you know right away. I also encourage people to get educated about how to do it, because a lot of people think you can just go look up vital records somewhere. The recording of them really differs depending on where the location is. Sometimes records have been destroyed, and so in doing it, it's often like a genealogical puzzle or like a mystery show where you actually have to trace your roots. So I guess your first step is talking to people who know things and write down what you know. Second thing is find all the documents you can around your house. Do you know where your birth certificate is? Can you find your parents' marriage certificate? Do you have your marriage certificate? Do you have your parents' passport? You know, so get all these documents together And then you begin to write down what we call a family group sheet, which is your mother and your father's full name, then when and where they were born, married, and died, and then a listing of all the children. The reason why that's so important is a lot of times one of the siblings is famous and has tons of stuff about them, and you get lots of clues about the family from them. One of the things Nancy will talk to you about is how much gets added by then doing your DNA, but you certainly don't start with your DNA. There are other sources that are wonderful, too, like looking at the census, looking at town records.
Deeds, I read, is also deeds.
Yes. Land records are so incredibly cool. I often give talks on that. And it's amazing the things that are covered in there. I'm glad you mentioned it. So one of the things that I focus on in my business is helping people learn about the family stories, not so much just so-and-so begat, so-and-so begat, so-and-so. I think the major story, the two major stories that got me interested were that my grandmother said that her father drowned at the Jersey Shore when she was just a baby. And trying to trace that and then eventually going to the Jersey Shore. But it was through that I found out that I'm a third Jewish, which for an Episcopalian was a little bit shocking but kind of exciting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we'll get back to that and some of the usable information about using deeds and other documents. But I do want to go to Nancy and ask you, so where does DNA fit into all of this? It's all scientific and new, and but Carol says you can't start there. What's your take on that?
Well, actually, a lot of people are starting there, which isn't the best way to go. But you mentioned at the top of the segment that you asked which way people would go, traditional research or DNA, and they have to use both of those together. DNA is only a tool to use with traditional research.
But this DNA phenomenon, this this new thing, is kind of fueling interest.
It's absolutely fueling interest. And even though the wonderful ads that they have on Ancestry, basically, that shows trained lederhosen for a kilt and whatever, it's bringing a lot of people in. A lot of kits were sold over the holidays. These people are testing because it's fun to do. They're not testing because of necessarily genealogy, but it's a step. It's a step in the right direction, and we're here to teach them how to combine the two.
And so what do we find out when we get this $99 kit and you spit a lot, I guess, into
it? You spit or you swipe your okay. cells, yeah. You get what most people now are from the ads that are testing are doing it for ethnicity. Ethnicity really is the least reason for doing it because the databases are so small, the reference databases that they compare your DNA with, to be taken maybe at the continental level. That's probably the best way to go. It'll only get better in time. As the reference databases get larger, your DNA ethnicity results are going to get more defined.
You'll see a color. You'll see a map with colors on it indicating you have ancestry in this part of the world going back at some point.
I tell people to treat that like a coffee table book. It's great fun to look at and talk about and discuss and wonder, but leave it at that for now. Wait for a few years until it gets more defined.
Is that because of accuracy concerns?
Well, because the reference databases, it's accurate as far as it goes, but the reference databases are so small in these areas that they're comparing your DNA. It'll only get better.
Is there other information, though?
Other information is what the genealogists are after, and that's the cousin matching. And I've actually talked to a lot of people who have done DNA testing, and they're not even aware. They haven't taken that one more step to click on that little spot on Ancestry or Family Tree DNA to see the cousin matches that they line up with. You can find – I work often with people with unknown heritage, maybe adoptees, maybe whatever reasons – and you can find biological family with DNA testing.
But to be clear, to find those people, they have to be in the database.
Well, no, actually, they don't have to be. We used to say that in the beginning, that the people had to be in the databases. But the databases are so large that relatives of those people are in the databases, their aunts, their uncles, their cousins, their grandchildren. So pretty much you're going to be able to narrow things down. DNA testing isn't for everybody. No matter how the documentation is in your paperwork, It's impossible to know that that paperwork is correct. We all know intentionally or unintentionally there are lies in paperwork. DNA testing can tell you or a member of your family something you may not know, may not want to know. So if you're not prepared, then you really shouldn't test.
So in other words, paternity issues in the past
Absolutely.
And that sort of thing. And so that renders the paper trail inaccurate because
that's why they have to be used in conjunction with each other.
So I get this. I'm getting this image now that if you start with Carol and, you know, looking in your attic for some documents for your immediate relatives, and then you do DNA and find out that you had relatives generations ago in Eastern Europe, now you've got to connect those two end pieces somehow. What would be the next step in that process then?
Well, I think a lot of times people try to leap across the pond, as they say. What you really want to do is validate what you've got going forward. I mentioned the story about my grandmother. She wanted very much to live to be 100 so she could be on the Smucker's jar on the TV program. And when she died, she thought, and everybody else did, and it's on her death record and it's on her tombstone, that she was born in 1883. But she just was so darn old that she forgot. She was born a whole year earlier, and which is not unusual for people who live in their late 90s to not really remember, because it wasn't a big deal to them until they wanted to be on the Smucker's jar. So part of what you need to do is go back and check and see. And frequently, people aren't even listed by name on the birth certificate. She was just called female Pollock, but I knew that it was her birth date. So and then also people dissemble. I mean, you'll see people who lie about when they were married or born because they don't want it to appear that something happened out of wedlock.
And people changed their names when they got here, too, which I assume makes it even more difficult.
Yeah, and I'm glad you said people change their names. A lot of times people thought that at Ellis Island, people would say, oh, your name's too long, I'm going to fix that. It really wasn't. It's that sometimes they made their names simpler, either because of prejudice or just so people would be able to pronounce it. I think a big thing is people did not care about spelling. One of the first things you'll hear when you're talking to somebody is say, well, that's not how our name was spelled. Well, you don't know. A lot of people were illiterate and they spelled things phonetically. So sometimes your name just changed accidentally.
I know that during World War II, when some people came over, they changed their names to not sound German.
Exactly.
So are there points in time where record keeping ends, or there are rough spots that people commonly get to when trying to go back? Certain dates, for example, where records were not kept prior to.
Oh, those are those are all over the place. What's happening now, though, that is scary is restricting records that you could get to before because of fear of identity theft. And so it's more like the records are actually that were available are closing. And so it's very important. Genealogists are actively campaigning to stop that from happening. I would say one of the stumbling blocks for people, let's just use the census, which is very helpful. It wasn't intended to record everybody in your family so that years later you could find your family. It was to apportion seats in the government and to look after other trends and for tax reasons. So the 1900 census, for example, has wonderful information. It gives the year of birth. It gives relationships. It gives the parents' birthplace, all of which might be wrong. But the 1890 census was wonderful and was 99% destroyed. And so that can be a problem. If your family, let's say, came over in 1886, you're not going to see them until 1900. And if their name is very different, you may not find them at all.
How much training, though, do you need to navigate the census for this kind of information? It's not intuitive necessarily.
Well, there's two things you can do. One is there's some wonderful books and there's all sorts of seminars and there's free things on the website familysearch.org. They have various wikis on topics. There's wonderful books that are available, but also as you start to do it, you just get so much more knowledgeable, and so you get smarter. I want to give you one just basic example of something that confused me in the beginning, and it's one of the first things people learn, which is people use whatever you call it, the word afterwards of junior, to mean that somebody in the community had the same name and was older. So when I saw my ancestor's name was Joseph McCoy Jr., I thought his father's name was Joseph. His father's name was John. It's just there was another Joseph who was in the town. So it's more, the more you talk to other people and go to conferences, for example, we have one coming up this Saturday in Augusta on writing your family history.
Where and when is that?
That is this Saturday, April 21st, in the Elks Club in Augusta. And our main speaker is Joseph Anderson, who happens to be the publications director for the Maine Genealogical Society. But it will help people figure out how you put all this research together. We put on a lot of programs over the year. Every year we have a fall conference, and we often have a spring conference. But you can also learn a lot more just from reading the journals. People think that you get the journals so that you can find your family. But in fact, you learn about how to solve problems with deeds and with court records and all sorts of other things.
Yeah. Nancy, I want to go back to something we talked about a minute ago, about this danger of finding out something that you don't want to know. Do you have any examples of stories?
I have a lot of examples, but I'll use myself. I've been doing genealogy traditional research for well over 30 years. Absolutely loved it. I have a passion for it. And I had all these wonderful records that genealogists really strive to get, you know, birth records and death records and marriage, like all of that stuff. Well, for myself, I had my birth record, had my passport and license and everything that anybody would want to find about themselves. I had all of that. And then I did a traditional genealogy research on my classmates. I was the last class to graduate from Greeley Institute in Cumberland, and we're the largest class to ever graduate from Greeley Institute in Cumberland. And for 3 years, I did, for one of our reunions, about 30 classmates came, and I had done their genealogies, traditional genealogies, and I did a presentation on how they were all related to each other, which was great fun. Because if you live in an area for a long period of time, you go back 5 or 6 generations, and you're going to have common ancestors, and that's what I found. I was one of 3 people that I couldn't connect to anyone, which was pretty disappointing for me. But so that was before DNA. Then along came DNA, and at our next reunion, I had a little bit of a postscript because I said, surprise, surprise, I now am related to all of you. Because all of those records that I had for myself, those primary source records, they were all lies. They were all paperwork, but they weren't truthful. So I found out just a few years ago that I have a different paternal biological line than I grew up knowing and that I grew up researching.
And this this can be upsetting to people.
It certainly can be upsetting. That's why if you're not prepared for an unexpected result, then don't test. You know, it's not for everyone. I wasn't even aware that there could be an unexpected result because I was very new and I jumped in and I did everything to do with genealogy and DNA and I was going to do it. And I got an email from a woman on the West Coast saying, it looks like we're third cousins. And I thought, gee, I know my cousins, pretty much my genealogy. And when I did further research, my surprises, my secrets that were taken to the grave were discovered.
Yeah, we often have this family lore that we cling tightly to, even though it might be full of holes. But anyway, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, your questions and comments, the number 1-800-399-3566. That's 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Green Lion Gallery in Bath, celebrating the creative alchemy of handmade prints and other artwork from Maine and beyond. More at greenlionart.com.
On the next Fresh Air, Brian Tyree Henry, who co-stars in the FX series Atlanta as Alfred Miles, who goes by his rap name Paperboy. Henry is also starring on Broadway in the show Lobby Hero. He won an Emmy for his guest appearance on This Is Us, in which he sang very soulfully. Join us.
Fresh Air is tonight at 7 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio. In case you haven't heard, Maine Public Classical is now bringing 24/7 classical music to many parts of the state, and we've been hearing from many happy listeners. If you love classical music or want to know more about Maine Public Classical, visit mainepublic.org. We have stations in Portland, Bangor, Waterville, Freiburg-Bridgeton, Millbridge Down East, and Boothbay-Brunswick. Maine Public Classical, If you love classical music or need a break from the news, you can check it out. Again, details at mainepublic.org.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Keith Shortall. Today on the program, we're talking about genealogy and searching for your roots. Joining me today, Nancy Mason. She's with the Maine Genealogical Dig, which helps people with genealogical DNA testing. Carol Prescott McCoy is president of the Maine Genealogical Society and owner of FindYourRoots.com, conducting research and education on genealogy. We invite you to join the conversation. The number is 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. I'll take a few calls here in a moment, but let's go back to deeds. How do deeds factor into this sleuthing work that we do to find out where we came from?
Oh, I'm so glad you asked that question. A lot of times people manage to die or get married without having it be recorded. But one of the things people were very good about recording, even if it was long after it happened, is their land ownership. And frequently what we can see is when something like what happened in Cumberland County, Maine, where the probate records all burned up, so you didn't have any of the wills recorded or the estates, you'll often be able to retrace who the heirs were by looking at the land records. So some of the things you'll see is the grantor, who is giving up the property, the grantee. Frequently, the wife will have to release her right of dower, so you'll see the wife's name. You'll have the date of the property, but the descriptions of the properties, the neighbors, and the witnesses, all of those areas have different clues. This is a topic I love to talk on. I'm actually going to be speaking at the Portsmouth, New Hampshire Public Library on this later this year, sometime this spring. Date escapes me, but it stays a popular topic because there's so much information in.
Can you really do this yourself? It seems to take a lot of time. It might take travel and a certain amount of training to find out how to access records, or is it just easier to pay somebody like yourself to help them with the process?
Oh, the answer is both. One of the things I recommend if you're going to do it yourself is that you get some coaching from somebody who knows about it. Almost everybody who's done genealogy is a person who will encourage and love to help you. So whether you're a paid professional or just somebody who loves it, we like to share the information. But I'll give you an example for myself. When I was tracing my great-grandfather, I found out that the store that was based in New York City was really primarily in Montgomery, Alabama. And that wasn't going to be convenient for me. So I hired somebody who lived in Montgomery. And lo and behold, my great-grandfather's probate records and all sorts of other exciting things were down there. So just because you're a professional genealogist, it doesn't mean you don't hire people. I hired somebody to do work for me outside of Philadelphia and Quaker Records. So I strongly recommend both. A lot of people find the research fun and rewarding and exciting.
Can you trade so they help you with something?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
It's a barter system. Let's take a few calls here. Let's go first to David in Bangor. Hi, David. Welcome to the program. You're on the air.
Hey, thanks a lot. This has been a great show so far. A couple of questions I had sort of been answered. But what happened with me is our family came in with a name that was unusual or something like that. I don't know the whole history of it. But then it appears they added some letters or whatever because of what you're saying, like Germany or something like that. And I was wondering, if I searched for family, would it stop at that point and I couldn't find any further about that name or anything you know about that?
Well, that's a great question. What you need to do is really get out of the mindset of our name was only spelled one way. And once you know it was spelled many different ways, then you check on all those names. I think the other thing that you want to do is talk to cousins and other people because different people knew people by different names. So no, it doesn't stop. It's just you need to recognize that the people with these two different names were the same person.
Okay, and the next question, that Augusta meeting. Is that free to go there?
No. If you're a member of the Maine Genealogical Society, it's $45. And if you're not a member, it's $55. If you want to go, you better, we're pretty close to full. But you can go on the website and send an email to me if you're interested, and I'll see if we've got any seats left. And I'll get back to you.
Okay. David, thank you very much. Best of luck. Let's go to John in Wiscasset. Hi, John.
Hello, Keith. It's good to hear your program. I'm a first-time caller here. I agree with your guess. It sounds like you have the real McCoy there.
Oh, totally.
Yeah, you know, I'm from another country. I'm from the Irish Republic. I know you talked about being
how exciting.
Northern Irish roots. But it's so true, you know, we all this thing now with all the ads and genealogy.com and all that, and I met somebody about a year ago, an older woman, saying she was all excited to tell me she was 88% Irish. And I said, I'm sorry. And she, you know, she thought I didn't hear her. And, I mean, I don't know what that means, because I'm 100% Irish, but DNA-wise, I would have to investigate it way deeper than saying that I'm Irish. Because there are so many ways of being Irish or French or German or anything else. And that whole thing is misleading people. Maybe a bit like Facebook misled people in many ways to believe that you're getting something that it really isn't. And it's meaningless because I know for a fact that the old Irish, they have searched, you know, they've looked into the DNA of different Irish characters that were like thousands of years old. One was from the Mediterranean. You know, it was from the Middle East, and that's about true. I believe that. Mm. So that, you know, the closest thing to a foreigner in my family would have been Anglo-Norman from about 1,000 years ago.
Well, you know,
I mean that, you know, I'm like tribal Irish. I don't need any references to that. But before that, yes. And I would say, you know, people, it's all about longing. People want to know who their cousins are. But do you really want to talk to your cousins?
Sometimes, yes.
Well, that cousin may have a family Bible or something, or information about one of your family members that you would like to have, or you'd like to have them share with you.
Yes, that's a really good point. I think the other thing that you're bringing up, and I know Nancy will want to comment on this, is just because you find out through DNA, perhaps your biological father is different from who you thought, the person who raised you is still really important. And even if you're adoptive, understanding the families that people are brought up in. So there's both your actual sociological family as well as what your DNA is.
Yeah. Ed, did you want to add anything?
No, I agree 100%.
Yeah. He mentioned Facebook, and I want to go there for a second. What about the data that are collected about you and your family safe from being used? This also comes up in, you know, using DNA to search for predispositions for diseases and that sort of thing. There's real concern, I'm guessing, around keeping this data from people who might use or abuse it.
Well, I mean, that definitely is a concern. I mean, the more information you put up about yourself, whether it's on Ancestry.com or you put it up on Facebook or I put it up on my own website, yes, it can be misused. On the other hand, the more information you share, the more you might find something out. So I'll give you an example. When I was just researching my own family, I post a lot of pictures of the family because I think they're fun and old documents. And through that, I've gotten so many interesting contacts. One person sent me a 25th anniversary picture of the couple and all their children, and it was wonderful to see the family resemblance. I've had other portraits sent to me. The store I mentioned that was in Montgomery, Alabama, by putting stuff up on my web about that, somebody actually sent me some clothing samples from the store from 1905. You know, if I don't share it, I don't get that back. So, yes, I'm at risk. It's a trade-off.
Mm-hmm. And those go back a few generations of our ancestors. They're not only our ancestors. There are a lot of other people's ancestors also, just like the class project that I did connecting everyone. I mean, they shared fourth-grade grandparents. They shared third-grade grandparents. So it's nice to share that information. My mother is first generation here from Scotland, and I connected through DNA with a second cousin of hers who remained in Scotland. I never, ever would have known the information that she shared with me without doing that.
All right, let's go to Adam, who works at the State Library. Hi, Adam. Yeah. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I just wanted to talk to the role of local public libraries as a resource to folks that are looking to do some family research. Many of Maine's public libraries have interesting local genealogy collections that may be helpful to you and staff that are able to answer questions and help folks get started. I happen to work for the State Library. Any Maine citizen can come in and get a free library card and use our services. And we have a very large genealogy collection about family histories from A to Z, town histories for pretty much every community in Maine. And we also have, actually, she just retired, an in-house genealogist that had free classes for folks that were looking to get started and wanted some tips. We're in the process of filling that position right now. But the real reason why I called is to talk about digitization and those resources as well. So we're doing a lot right now with newspaper digitization and getting thousands of pages of old newspapers put online. But also things like maps, town records, scrapbooks, photographs. We're putting it all into a digital repository that we've put together with the Maine State Archives to make this information searchable. So when you digitize a newspaper, every single word within that newspaper is keyword searchable. So if you're looking for a person or a place, even if it was in a newspaper from long in the past, if it's been digitized and it's online, you can now use that to search and find information about family members, kind of that next level of research. Once you've identified the name, then you can start finding the stories.
No more hours of microfiche surfing in the basement.
Exactly. Right? Yeah. Solving the problem. It's just the tip of the iceberg about what's been done right now. But we have a place. It's the Digital Maine Repository. And it's just digitalmaine.com/newspapers. And there we've linked a lot of the places where you can find digital Maine newspapers. Some of them have been digitized by the State Library, but some of them have been done by other libraries or other institutions. And so if it's been done, we have a link on that page where you can go and search through records.
Yeah. All right. Great. Adam, thank you very much. Interesting information. I'm wondering what it's like for someone, say, like our producer, Jonathan Smith. is it harder for Jonathan Smiths in the world to do their genealogy than it is for a Keith Shortall?
Well, it might be and it might not. I think some people get scared because you have such a common name like Smith, which actually can be misspelled even. On the other hand, the most important thing is proving that your Jonathan Smith is one person. And so that's the biggest challenge with that. But it doesn't mean that you can't find it. In fact, one of the cases I worked on involved a Smith, and the name, I think, was Sarah Smith, and she was in two different censuses, and one in 1850 or so, she was 40 years old, and then 10 years later, she was 20 years older, which is biologically very challenging. So right away, you know one of these is wrong, and she's got the name Smith. But by going back and looking at deeds, one of her ancestors' name was Cephas. C-E-P-H-A-S. That was uncommon enough that I was able to pinpoint the family and find out what her real age and find out who her parents were. So it's a question of persevering. I encourage people to look at those various murder mystery shows because they follow a similar process. They get a clue and try and check it out. And they rule people in and they rule people out. It's the same kind of thinking.
Yeah. Let's go to Elizabeth in Portland. Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead. You're on the air.
Oh, thanks. So I have a question about the accuracy of the DNA tests because I had both of my parents do them, and I am sure that, you know, my mom's mom was born in Canada, Prince Edward Island, and when we did the testing, nothing came up from that area or France. So that was a little bit strange.
Well, the different companies each have different reference databases, so the information you receive from the company may look a little bit different from each other. We all get 50% of our DNA from our mother and 50% from our father, and then going back, it halves, but not exactly in half necessarily. I think you have to look where they came from Canada, where they came previous from Canada. Your DNA results are correct, but I think, like I mentioned, the ethnicity has a long ways to go before they really get defined, where we can really see what we know.
So the paper trail would help in that case.
Certainly.
Yeah. So you really should do both. All right. We're going to take a quick break. First, a word about tomorrow's show. You'll join Jennifer Rooks for a conversation about recovering from opioid addiction. She'll speak with several people who are in recovery, and they'll share their stories and advice for others. Email your comments or questions to talk@mainepublic.org. Tweet us or post to our Facebook page. You're listening to Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Norris, helping businesses and schools stay safe through engineered security, life safety, and emergency communication systems. NorrisInc.com. And the Fisher Charitable Foundation, proud to support the Maine Public Annual Fund for 35 consecutive years.
For nearly 60 years, the communist island of Cuba has been ruled by men named Castro.
En las condiciones de la inmensa mayoría de los países de América Latina, no hay otro camino que la lucha armada.
On Thursday, power will be handed over to a new president. It's historic, but will this transition lead to any real change? I'm Ari Shapiro. That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
All Things Considered is later this afternoon and every weekday afternoon from 4 to 6:30 on Maine Public Radio. Stay with us at 2 o'clock after Maine Calling for the Commonwealth Club of California. Today, Betty Reed Soskin, at age 96, is the oldest serving career park ranger with the National Park Service. This is just one chapter in a long life of public service. Her resume ranges from numerous roles, including clerking in an all-black trade union during World War II, political activism during the Civil Rights Movement, work as a congressional field representative, to historian. That's coming up on the Commonwealth Club of California at 2 o'clock here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Keith Shortall. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, why people are drawn to genealogy. Joining me today, Carol Prescott McCoy. She's an educator and family historian and president of the Maine Genealogical Society. Nancy Mason is with the Maine Genealogical Dig and administrator of the Maine Genealogical Project on Family Tree DNA. Join the conversation. Give us a call, the number 1-800-399-3566. And let's go to Tammy in Franklin. Hi, Tammy. Welcome to the program.
Question also about the accuracy of the ancestry DNA test as it regards American Indian blood out from other blood. And the reason I ask is that my mother is Cherokee. She grew up on Cherokee Indian Reservation, but when I did my ancestry DNA test, it came back zero American Indian.
Might this have to do with the database?
It does. It does. But we often hear stories of a Native American in our ancestry, whether it's our great-grandmother or this or that. We don't know. You really need to know your direct line. Now, you know your direct line. It's your mother. You know, you feel your mother grew up on the reservation. She may and may not have Native blood in her. She may have grown up on the reservation and been part of the reservation, but she might not have been biologically part of that reservation. Ideally, if it's your mother and you feel that she was full-blooded, then you should have, that should show up on your ancestry DNA test.
Tammy, best of luck. Let's go to Harold in Hollowell. Hi, Harold.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air.
Thank you very much. I wish to report a success story with DNA.
Yay.
I was adopted as a baby in South Africa back in the late 40s, and all I had about my original family was the last name that I was given at birth. And I took a DNA sample from Ancestry, and as a result of that, I have been linked up with a biological half-sister and a cousin and an aunt.
That's so wonderful. I'm so happy for you.
So there are so that was a surprise, but it was a happy surprise, or not a surprise.
It was something you were looking for,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I was basically looking for my biological roots. I have my adoptive roots back to the founding of this country. I have someone was on the Mayflower, someone was founding Rhode Island. I mean, we go way, way back in New England and England. But I didn't know anything about my adoptive family until I took this DNA test.
Oh, that's amazing. I'm so very happy for you.
I don't mean to pry, but since you called, what was it like reaching out to them? How did you ask the question?
With some delicacy. Well, the original person was also a match on Ancestry DNA, so I simply sent her a note there and said, this is my birth last name, this is where I was born and when. And she responded to me and gave me enough information so that I was then able to follow along. And it's simply been a fun matter of discovery. There have been some people who had no idea that I existed, other people that did know about me, but had, of course, not since the records were closed at the adoption back in the late 40s in South Africa, they didn't have any way of tracing me. Mm-hmm. Not that they were interested, but yeah, it has turned out to be very nice. I have met, or haven't actually met in person, but I have certainly talked with and emailed and Skyped with people who are biologically related to me that we had no idea who we were.
Harold, thank you for sharing your story. Let's go to Larry in Bangor. Hi, Larry.
Hi, how are you?
Good, good, thanks.
I'm adopted. My mother is my mother, but my father is unknown to me. Every time I would speak to my mother about it, she would totally ignore my questions. At one time it was needed because I have various medical problems, and the VA kept asking me, what's your heritage? And what I have done through 23andMe, I found out that I am 99.8% white boy, and I am 0.2% Native American, which means somewhere around 1600, somebody made puppies with a Native American. I hope it was consensual. And it means I'm a longtime American.
All right, Larry, thanks very much. Let's go to Paul in Portland. Hi, Paul.
Hi, this is Paul.
Yes, go ahead, Paul.
Can you hear me?
I can, yeah.
Okay, very good. I'm calling because I'm interested in French-Canadian genealogy, and I became aware of the fact that if one can trace the family back to about 1875, there are several volumes put out by a Monsignor Tanguay, which does all the genealogy, so a person can do the French-Canadian genealogy back to colonial times in an afternoon. And I know that so places like the MacArthur Library in Biddeford has those volumes, and that I want to find out if your panel knows about this research and whether they think it's valid research.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have not worked specifically with French Canadians, but I know that some of their records are particularly wonderfully detailed. I would check out a number of different heritage centers to see what they have. A thing I would caution you is as soon as you hear the phrase, well, all I need to do is find that, and then I know everything back to whenever, you always have to check out things for errors because you don't know if all you have to have is one mistake in the line and the rest of it isn't true. But there are a number of French-Canadian heritage centers. One way you could find it is simply by Googling it, or you could go on Cindy's list and put in French Canadian. Do you have some thoughts, Nancy?
No, not really.
Nancy, I do have someone writing asking if you would comment on the types of DNA testing companies and the size of the comparable databases, whether it's 23andMe or Ancestry or My Family Heritage.
Ancestry is the largest one, and they have over 7 million tests now. That's a huge, huge database. Family Tree DNA is strictly for DNA research and for genealogy research, and they have about 700,000. 23andMe, which started out as a medical, more of a medical search, and then they've kind of gone into genealogy, and they've got about 3 million. MyHeritage is one of the new kids on the block, and they've got 1 million already. That's a great research place. And Living DNA. And Living DNA is the only company to date that offers ethnicity breakdowns by region within the British Isles. Now, if you're going to test, the best way to test, unless you have a specific reason for testing, like an unknown biological line, I would suggest that you test at Ancestry first. And once you get those results, you can transfer those results from Ancestry to Family Tree DNA, to MyHeritage, and to Living DNA. And those are all free transfers. And that way you'll be in 4 databases rather than just the one Ancestry.
So, and those are free because these databases want you to
They take your raw data because it increases the size of their database, obviously.
Right. Interesting. What about cost here? We know about the $99 DNA test, but if you were to really try to go back multiple generations, should you save up? I mean, how much is this really going to cost to do a really thorough search?
Well, the cost for the DNA is your test, you have it, and that's it. That is the cost. If you're going to do traditional research, you need to travel or hire researchers for you, and obviously that's going to cost a lot more money.
I suppose that's up to you. You could go as far as you want.
Yeah.
All right, let's go to South Freeport and Mark. Hi, Mark. Welcome to the program.
Hi, good afternoon. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead, please.
In my family lore, there was always a story about two brothers who came in the 1700s through Boston. One brother went to Pennsylvania and subsequently to Ohio, and the other brother went to we don't know where. And I did a bunch of research through something called the Rich Family Association and discovered some male members of the family up in Vermont, purportedly one of the brothers from Boston, and I know a lot about the Ohio connection because that's my line. We did, to try and make this quick, we did DNA tests, found male volunteers, and did a Vermont test that came back with 23 markers, and we did an Ohio test that came back with 46 markers, and it was an inconclusive result as far as whether they were brothers or not. We would very much like to prove that. All we got was they're related or possibly cousins. Can you comment on a 23 marker versus a 46 marker DNA test?
Well, the only company that does Y-DNA testing is Family Tree DNA, and the more markers you test, the more expensive it is, but the more accurate it can be. They set at 12 markers. They go up to 36, 47, 67, and 111. So those two people that tested probably should go up and test at the next level of markers.
Hmm. All right, Mark, good luck. I'm wondering about, we mentioned these, don't do this if you don't want to maybe be surprised,
right.
But are companies also now intentionally withholding, quote-unquote, surprises?
All the companies now have a checkbox that you can check if you do not want the cousin matching, or if you don't want to be seen within the database. So you can check that, but it kind of defeats, for me, the reason genealogists want to test is because they want to find these people.
Mm-hmm.
I might suggest that, I mentioned that I started the Maine Genealogical Dig 2.5 years ago. Dig stands for DNA Interest Group, and we meet in Gray the second Saturday of every month. And we've met now for 2.5 years. Since then, we have a Winslow Library at the Winslow Library. They meet on the third Saturday from 10 to 12. And the Ellsworth Library now meets on the fourth Saturday from 10 to 12. And these are all free, open to the public. Anyone with an interest with DNA is welcome to come and join.
And is it general discussion or do you?
Yeah, it's people helping people, volunteer presentations, group discussions, sharing and working together to learn about using DNA as a tool with traditional research.
Yeah. All right, let's see. Let's try to get some more calls in here. Valerie is in Portland. Hi, Valerie. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I'm adopted, and I was born in the mid-50s, and you didn't know anything about your biological family. And a few years ago, I was finally able to get my original birth certificate, which only had my mother's information, because when you're illegitimate, they always protect the man. And so he never appears. And I started following her family on Ancestry and Family Search. And from there, this Christmas, I got the Ancestry test and the 23andMe test with
wonderful.
The medical.
Wonderful.
And, sorry?
I said wonderful. That's great.
And, you know, one of the things I was discovered through Ancestry, because I don't think people realize, but for some adopted people, we don't look anything like anybody in our family, our adopted family. And so, you know, you grow, people who are adopted, it's like you got your grandfather's eyes, you got your aunt's smile, you know, all that stuff. We don't look like anybody. So I was, somebody posted some pictures and I found out that I looked a lot like my great-great-grandmother on my mother's mother's side.
What did that feel like in that moment?
I felt like a connection, like, okay, I look like somebody. These people are my, you know, genetic people. They're not the people who raised me. That is my family. But they're my biological family. You know, I have some history.
Yeah. My sister was born in 1940, and she was adopted into our family. And I found, through traditional research, her biological mother's line, and I'm searching very desperately for her biological father's line with DNA. We were able to, through DNA, I actually connected with a half-brother and half-sister, and we met with them a couple of years ago and spent a week vacationing. That was the first time she'd ever met anyone had biological lines to her, and they were half-siblings.
Yeah. We only have about a minute left, so I want to give you last chances here to tell people how to reach you and find out about what you've got online. So Carol?
Oh, well, you can reach the Maine Genealogical Society on maineroots.org. You can reach me on my website, which is find-your-roots.com. Or you could email me at cmccoy3333@aol.com.
And you're willing to help because you love this stuff.
I am willing to help. I do. It is a business, and so I can answer quick questions and then refer you to somebody I'm probably not going to have time to take you on as a client, but I'm glad to answer your questions.
Well, business is good. Okay.
And my email is dna@maine.rr.com. We have an active Facebook group, and it's called the Maine Genealogical Dig. If you just search for Dig on Facebook, you'll probably find us. And we do have the Maine Genealogical Project. If you've tested a family tree DNA, you can join the Maine Genealogical Project.
All right, Nancy, Carol, thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you.
Really interesting.
It was really fun. Thank you.
Nancy Mason started the Maine Genealogical Dig to help people with DNA testing. She's the administrator of the Maine Genealogical Project on family tree DNA. Carol Prescott McCoy owns findyourroots.com. She's an educator, family historian, and the president of the Maine Genealogical Society. Roddy Nickpour ran the board today, and Owen Manahan answered your calls. You can find past editions of Maine Calling, as well as a link to our audio archives, by visiting mainecalling.org. Today's show will be rebroadcast again tonight at 8 o'clock. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Keith Shortall. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.